On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
I'm really delighted to welcome back to On the Bookshelf. A.J. Rice is CEO of Publis PR, a premier communication firm in D.C. who has produced or promoted Laura Ingraham, Donald Trump Jr., Monica Crowley, Senator Marsha Blackburn, Charles Krauthammer, Dr. Ben Carson, Michael Savage, Pastor Paula White Kane, Steve Hilton, Alan Dershowitz, Bobby Kennedy Jr., Naomi Wolf, Newt Gingrich, Victor Davis Hanson, and many others. He served as executive producer to Laura Ingraham for 4 years and Monica Crowley for 2 years. Following this, he produced an investigative news show at the Washington Times for John Solomon for 3 years called America's Morning News. It was later brought in by Glenn Beck's team to help launch the Blaze radio network. And this is his newest book, The Woking Dead, Publius Prose, Volume 1, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. It's from Post Hill Press. AJ, it is great to have you back on the bookshelf.
Brother Doc, it's great to be here. Great to be talking to your audience.
We were talking before we started recording, and we'll say that again. The hardest thing was not to decide what to include in this book, but what to leave out. And there are 97 different essays that are in this book covering a great variety of thoughts. How did you figure which ones to leave in?
Well, it was tough. So, I mean, look, I'm part of the short attention span theater generation. So the thing about this book is you don't have to read it cover to cover. So you can jump around.
Right.
And there's 10 sections. There's 97 essays. They're like little vignettes, right? Some are humorous. Some are horrific. Some are both. It's a fun read. Some of it is terrifying because there's things in there that you forgot that happened here in the culture. But it was tough. There was way more. The publisher was like, "Man, you got to get this. You got to cut this thing down." So there was a bunch of stuff left on the floor. But I think, and we even added some fresh stuff. You know, that wasn't essays from the past. We added new essays and we updated things. So hopefully, you know, for the audience, they really enjoy it.
Let's start off talking about the title, "The Woking Dead." Obviously, play on the Walking Dead. What you're talking about is the woke culture. And for our listeners who aren't really sure what that means, should we define that first? This is over the last couple of years, this rising tide of intolerance.
Yes. So a couple of ways we can talk about it. Basically, wokeism is the latest iteration of political correctness married to the nanny state, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But at its core, and look, political correctness spins up every once in a while. I think the last time it spun up was in the 1990s with the Murphy Brown Language Police, the pantsuit battalion telling us how to be PC and how to speak. I mean, a lot of this is always sort of wrapped up in language, right?
Right.
Anytime it makes its appearance. But for the historical purposes with your audience, they should know that the people that are devotees of wokeism, which comes in a lot of different forms, it has a lot of different flavors of ice cream, right? Like Baskin and Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, cancel culture, critical race theory. The origins of this is about 100 years ago. It is, at its core, cultural Marxism. That's what it is. It's cultural Marxism. What happened was, before World War One, before even the fall of Russia into the Soviet Union, there were Marxists here. And they were surveying the landscape of the United States, and it dawned on them that they weren't going to be able to get a workers' revolution. They weren't going to be able to get pipe fitters and welders and bricklayers and lumberjacks and longshoremen to overthrow their country. It wasn't going to happen because our blue-collar workers are very patriotic. They fought in our wars. They live and die and bleed for this country.
Right.
So they needed a different army, because they weren't going to get a plumber carpenter army, right? Even
mm-hmm.
Even in the unions, they weren't going to get it from them.
Right.
And where did they look? Well, they looked to the institutions. So what you're dealing with here is 100 years, the long cultural Marxist march through the institutions that began with taking over of the media, academia, including the government schools, the theater districts of the United States, the early motion picture studios, some radio, quite frankly, the radio when it was entertainment radio.
Right.
And of course, they found home in the Democratic Party with Woodrow Wilson and Margaret Sanger. So if you fast forward to today, 100 years, these are the same villains we're fighting now. The difference is, of course, that they have big tech protecting them now that they didn't have 100 years ago. Big tech acts as the cartilage, the force field that holds them all together and protects them. It's what allows them to shadow ban, deplatform, demonetize. And look, 100 years ago, you could cancel Bible, you could cancel Graham Greene, you could cancel George Orwell. It was very hard to cancel them at your own risk.
Right.
It took a lot to move against Ernest Hemingway.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas today, you could get canceled with the big tech's help at the speed of light, the flip of a switch.
That is the truth. All it takes is one offhanded comment or one liking something that there is an organized effort to dislike, and all of a sudden, you are persona non grata, right? I just finished a couple minutes ago reading about a wildly leftist guy, Stephen Patrick Morrissey, iconoclast, rock star, radical vegan, animal rights activist. And you compared him to Robespierre, and I love that, because that's exactly right. This is a guy that was way to the left of most people in Western culture, and yet, when he dared to say that he liked being British and he thought his people were right, they didn't need the rest of Europe to be successful, boom, here come the wokes. And they just went after him with a vengeance. And he
was
he was kind of stunned. It's like, wait, I'm your guy. How dare?
He's always been, he's off on his own now, but he was the lead singer of The Smiths, which was this sort of counterculture Britpop punk band in the 80s.
Right.
And late 70s. He is a man of the left. But, Robespierre got the guillotine too, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, look, I don't care whether it's the Bolsheviks or the Jacobins or whoever. The one thing I do say to people that are wondering whether this could ever end is that most revolutions eventually eat themselves.
Yeah.
They eventually run out of heads to chop. They start chopping each other.
For the people who are not really that radical, why do they go along with the ones that are? Is it a sort of a sad case of they want to be liked by the cool kids, or they just don't like thinking for themselves, or it's easier?
That's what makes the Woking Dead such the vogue virus that it is. Some people are completely captured, right? Because this is a cultural tyranny. It's a level of authoritarianism where you're sort of captured. If you're not in the arena of ideas and you're just sort of virtue signaling and pantomiming the worst parts of left-wing culture right now, you can get totally swept up in this. We have little girls and boys that think they don't know what gender they are. Now, I always ask, where the hell are the parents? But, sometimes, look, the left has always sacrificed its children to the state.
Right.
Okay, I don't care whether it's welfare queens or, there's all variations of this. They love it, by the way. They love it. The more people that are on the dole of the government, the better. So if you're a Gen Z teenager right now, you're who they're after. They're trying to capture you. Every generation, they try to capture and hold in place and make them their foot soldier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what they're trying to do. Now, it's backfired quite a bit because eventually, in most cases, look at the boomers, for example. My parents are boomers, so I'm a millennial, which is Generation Y. The millennials are starting to turn 40. They get a bad rap on some things, but let me just posit something to your audience. Most boomers that weren't fighting in Vietnam, which were the older ones, the ones born in the 40s, they were the ones that ended up in Vietnam.
Right.
A lot of them, especially at the Northeast Corridor, they voted for Democrats in 68, 72, maybe even 76 against Ford, so for the peanut farmer, Jimmy Carter. But when Reagan showed up, that was it. They didn't vote for another Democrat since. One of the reasons Reagan was able to win 49 states is because Reagan was able to get the World War II generation and the boomers, meaning their parents mm-hmm. and their children, voting together.
Right.
So let me posit this to you. The millennials are the children of boomers. The boomers are the children of the World War II generation. You could draw a direct line in size and in accomplishments. The thing about millennials that always got them in trouble was that they were searching for purpose. Sometimes the purpose was dopey, like taking pictures of your food and putting it on your Instagram account, right?
Right.
But searching for purpose is a noble endeavor. It's why they won't sit in a cubicle for 40 years. It's why they reject the premise of the, I don't care if I lose my 401k. I'm out of here. This place stinks. Millennials, they're kind of rebels. They'll do that. They'll change careers multiple times. And they got hit by 9/11. They got hit by the financial crisis of 08 and the China virus recently. It's why they're waiting so long to own homes and start family. They're not really going to be the problem. If they decide to vote with the boomers, Republicans will never lose another election for a generation. And they're starting to. There's a bunch of them that might have voted for Obama once or twice. They were Obama zombies. In fact, the gentleman that wrote the foreword to the book wrote a book 12 years ago called The Obama Zombies. So I had to bring him back to address the woking dead.
Right.
Because this is the next iteration. And the question is, Gen Z in particular, because that's really who I'm talking about here. You know, this is the left's latest project. And it's no longer just the PC police nonsense. I mean, they are sending Steve and Gary and Larry into the women's locker room with these kids. So, look, parents have to fight back really hard. I remember VCRs. I remember pagers. This generation, Gen Z, they don't remember any of that. They were born with a smartphone in their hand.
Right.
And that is really scary.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to A.J. Rice, the author of The Woking Dead, Publius Prose, Volume 1, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. It's from Post Hill Press. Talking more about the continuation of the Obama years, you address the current president, who was the vice president under President Obama. It just seems like even the Democrats, the people that voted for him, or the people who just hated Trump and wouldn't vote for him for dog catcher, even those folks are starting to have buyer's guilt or buyer's regret, aren't they?
Absolutely. So what you're dealing with right now is this sort of backbenchers, the leftovers, the scraps that fell off the plate from the two Obama terms. Okay, these are the people that were next man up, next in line. And when Trump left, they all ran back to their old desks because they're really not the best and the brightest, ladies and gentlemen, that we have in this country. The former vice president, now president, is not. Him and his family, I mean, they're pretty much grifters. They've never signed in front of a paycheck. They've been living off of the audience of this show for 50 years. At least Joe has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are not special people. These are not people that... You know, I mean, most people, that they're part of the bureaucracy. They want to burnish their resume. So, yeah, I address him. He's kind of a reanimated corpse. He's the leader of the Woking Dead. You know, I don't know how much juice Joe's got left. He's lost a lot of MPH off his fastball. He looks to me like he's just sort of reading and signing whatever gets put in front of him. I find it fascinating that there are at least a healthy majority of people that are still backing everything this guy's doing, but you are right. There is some sunlight starting to creep in, and there are some people basically saying, well, you did your job, Joe. You know, you got rid of Trump. Walk off into the sunset. Let's not keep this going any longer by trying to run for a second term. They're starting to kind of push that.
The article that you wrote about one of my least favorite people, Michael Moore, I found pretty interesting, and this is from 2018, which is one of the older articles in the book, is talking about, is Michael Moore finally outlived his usefulness to the left? He's been able to parlay a great skill for editing into all sorts of accolades because he was on the right side of wokeness, but apparently he's not anymore. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, I mean, the people that, where the energy's coming from, they don't care about Michael Moore. Michael Moore sort of was the leader of the Gen X slacker revolution. He had a little moment, but he's never been a thought leader. He's been able to market. I mean, look, a lot of these guys that claim to be the sort of working man's advocate, there's so many of these people. Bruce Springsteen, another one, right?
Right.
John Mellencamp. I mean, they play this game when they leave their mansions that they're the sort of voice of the longshoreman and the lumberjack and the guy that sweats copper and the crab and the oyster fisherman and what, but they're not. They're limousine liberals flying around on private jets. Spare me your outrage. So, and quite frankly, a lot of them have become completely dishonest, 100%. But some of them haven't. Let me bring one of them up to you.
Okay.
Bill Maher, who doesn't agree with Doc or Rice on much, you know,
right,
is one of the few, it seems to be, free speech absolutists that are left that still call themselves liberal or Democrat. Because for the most part, other than him, maybe Naomi Wolf, Bobby Kennedy Jr., there's some others, Barry Weiss, you know, some other comedians like Dave Chappelle, which I talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like the you know, handful that aren't completely going along with what really is authoritarianism,
right,
of thought, of speech, of behavior. I mean, they want to. They're trying to regulate everything, especially our thoughts and our speech. So I think Maher realizes that. I mean, look, all the old school comedians, if they were still around, Maher's just really sort of channeling them,
mm-hmm,
right?
Right.
I mean, Carlin was no fan of Catholicism. Bill Maher's a known atheist,
right?
But they both knew, and Maher knows, that if he makes fun of Catholicism, he's not going to get a bunch of Jesuits, you know, or Franciscans jumping out of the bushes, stabbing him to death.
Right.
But what he does know is if he goofs on Islam, if he makes fun of Islam, or if he makes fun of, you know, anything, any one of the left sacred cows, that, you know, you could get stabbed like Salman Rushdie did a couple weeks ago.
Right.
You know, it's funny, and this is sort of a play on words. Lenny Bruce, one of the great stand-up comics, he was a bit of a troublemaker, wasn't always a fan of religious people. He used to say something like this. He used to say, you can pick on God or religion, but you better pick on the right God. Because if you choose the wrong God, you get stabbed like Salman Rushdie, right? If you pick on the Allah God, you're done. If you pick on the Marx God or the Obama God or the Biden God, if you pick on them, the Hillary Clinton God, you're done. All jokes must be about MAGA. They must be about Christianity. They must be about Judaism. Or they must be about capitalism. Because if you choose the wrong God to make fun of, you could be in trouble.
Yeah, yeah, you could get canceled or get permanently canceled. I think one of the sections of the book that I like the most is because as I went through, I marked which ones that I thought, okay, I want to be sure I mentioned some of these. But in the China's dress rehearsal, essentially, I have practically everything marked, as well as something that I consider to be sort of related to it, and that is the concept of the watermelon. Green on the outside, red on the inside, which I think is a very clever idea. Do you want to talk about the watermelons first or about China?
Well, we can talk about the Chinese dress rehearsal because it'll sort of lead us into, you know, what's kind of going on as it relates to the environmentalist crazies out there.
Excellent.
Look, we have been put through a totalitarian Chinese dress rehearsal here.
Yeah.
This virus, and look, some of it happened under Trump where you have these lifelong bureaucrats. We gave them so much power.
Yeah.
So much power. They do not want to give it up. These governors, these mayors, different people in the federal bureaucracy. And they kind of captured us. They captured us with a medical tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And while they had us captured, even before the virus, we had the Me Too movement that was turning all males in America into predators. Then during the virus, the George Floyd incident happens, and boom, we're all racist. You know, George Floyd's dead. So let's go tear down a statue of Christopher Columbus. I mean, it's just insanity, of course. And you and I know they were never going to stop with Confederate soldiers. I'm in Virginia. Virginia's the state where both the Revolutionary War and the Civil War ended.
Right.
So I'm surrounded by icons every direction. And you and I know they weren't going to just stop with Lee and Stonewall Jackson. They're going to move on to Grant, Sherman, and everybody else. And then work their way backwards, forwards, up and down the timeline. I mean, they're coming for the statue of you next, Doc.
Yeah, truly.
So, I mean, look. I mean, they're after Churchill. I mean, it's just craziness. I mean, there are people out there right now, while the Queen is sitting in England in Westminster Abbey, that are on TV, that are on radio, they're in print, talking about, you know, the patriarch of white supremacy, the matriarch of white supremacy is dead.
Right.
You know, I mean, this is who they are. I wrote a piece recently, not in the book, maybe it'll be in a future book, Be Thankful for Queen Elizabeth II's White Privilege. You know why? Because she was Earth's biggest philanthropist. That family gave away more money and did more things for black and brown people in the third world than any of these kooks on MSNBC or The View could ever dream of. So that's what we've been fighting. And look, as far as the virus goes, what's going on here with China, it has been a dress rehearsal. And if you look at what's going on in our politics today, you know, the environmentalists knew a long time ago that they needed to hide. I mean, look, these are just Marxists wrapped in green paint.
Yeah.
We call them watermelons. We call them watermelons because they're green on the outside, red on the inside. I mean, they're married to each other. So it is another branch of totalitarianism, this green energy garbage. I mean, they passed this inflation bill, mostly just a green energy giveaway.
Yeah.
You know, green energy, whatever the heck that is. I mean, look, all these electric cars are plugged into nuclear or coal-fired power plants. It's just ridiculous. But they're going to use this because this has always been about, always. Go back 100 years. It's about destroying the middle class. It's about destroying it. They knew in order to get Marxism to work, you cannot have a vibrant middle class in North America, in Canada, or the United States, or any other place in the Western world. You got to destroy it. You got to get everyone plugged in, acting like the Woking Dead on the big government respirator.
I'm thinking as you're saying these things and realizing of all the places where communism really took hold and is still in positions of authority, these are all places that did not have a culture of a middle class. Russia and all the satellite nations, China, Vietnam, Cuba, all of them had people with lots of money and people with practically no money. And
correct.
So the people with no money said, well, if the revolution's going to give me a voice, then I'm in favor of it. And the people who had money said, they won't hurt us. We have all the money. And
right.
there wasn't
it's
really
where
anybody.
They could make the case. They could make the case about the haves and the have-nots, right? Where they can make the case about the income gap, you know, or corruption at the top, like they did in Cuba, or in Vietnam, or North, you know, Korea.
Right.
That's the cases they made, and that's we go back to the beginning of the interview, and I told you that they tried to get the meat packers and the plumbers to, you know, send us all to the gallows, but they weren't buying it because of the ability. In a capitalist country, one built on Judeo-Christian philosophy, that there's upward mobility here. I mean, my father was a coal miner, worked as a coal miner to put himself through law school. That in and of itself is to the left, it horrifies them. They don't want that. They don't want you to be able to work as a coal miner to put yourself through law school. No freaking way do they want that.
Right.
And you're right. But that's it. They have to destroy the middle class. They have to in order for their plan to work. And one of the ways they're doing it, because they couldn't get, you know, the blue collar patriots to do it, is they're trying to take over. It's the long march through the institutions like I referenced before. Some of it's working.
We've got just a minute or so left. And I did want to mention you've got some really interesting articles in the Hollywood thing talking about Chris Pratt and Mark Wahlberg, who are becoming conservative stars, certainly coming from an interesting background, particularly Marky Mark, making a huge turnaround from where he was when he was younger. But isn't that what people usually do? We make our mistakes, or we try stuff when we're young, and when we realize, oh, we don't want to be known as the guy that showed his underwear first, I think I'll be a legitimate actor. And now he's a Catholic icon. He's a very devout man, and he's a role model. I think this is terrific, and I think that's great that you mentioned them in such a way in the book, and also Kobe Bryant and other athletes who don't really talk about politics. They just say the whole goal is to do the very best you can and inspire other people. Those
that's
are the
right.
kind of heroes that we need.
They're not obsessed with diversity. They're obsessed with excellence.
Yeah.
So they don't wake up in the morning and say, well, today I'm going to be great because I'm black or I'm white or I'm tall or I'm short or whatever. Is that they don't get sucked into the identity game, right?
Right.
If you have an identity, or have identity maybe through your faith and maybe through your country, it's like in the military, there's only three colors that matter, red, white, and blue. I don't care if you're a trans soldier. I care if you're a soldier. So, you know, that's what I tell people. The biggest problem is you have to focus on excellence. Don't focus on diversity. Don't focus on identity. Larry Bird's great because Larry Bird's great. He's not great because he's white. It's like Serena Williams isn't great because she's black, or Wayne Gretzky, or John McEnroe, or Kobe Bryant. It doesn't matter who it is. So that's what I tell people. You know, do something excellent each day, and then each week, then each month. They'll add up, and you'll be excellent. Strive for the best, and don't be afraid to fail. You know, I listened to Rush Limbaugh tell us that for 30 years. It's a shame he's not with us anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've had coaches, I've had, you know, religious leaders. You know, when it comes to Hollywood, having more guys out there like Pratt and Wahlberg, who are both Catholic. I mean, Pratt's married to Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter. Schwarzenegger's Catholic.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just saw Shia LaBeouf, who's doing a movie on Padre Pio, famous Catholic friar, priest.
Right.
He apparently was so caught up during the making of this, the Holy Spirit, he converted to Catholicism from Judaism.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's been troubled for a long time. So, you know, I mean, look, the deity works in mysterious ways, my friend.
Yes. Yes, indeed. AJ, it's always fun to talk to you, and it's always informative. And I really do appreciate the fact that you made time for me, because I know you are a really busy guy. And can we give people your social media stuff, websites and so forth?
Sure.
Okay.
You can find me on Twitter at publiuspr.com. You can get the book pretty much anywhere: Walmart.com, Target.com, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, for sure. And look, you know, AJ Rice on, you know, Facebook, on Rumble, on Instagram, and obviously the company as well. And if there's anybody listening that, you know, is an author or an activist or has a conservative group, wants to get out there, you know, that's what we do.
Yeah.
This is my first book, but we work with a lot of aspiring authors, and, you know, names you know and names you didn't know till Doc interviewed them.
Yeah, absolutely. In the last year, you and I talked about Bobby Kennedy Jr.'s book, and just recently I talked to Naomi Wolf. So that's in large part thanks to the work that you guys are doing. Is there anything that you wanted me to ask you about that I did not get around to ask?
I would say that, you know, for maybe the young people that are listening, what you need to do in life is commit yourself to being the best at something, right?
Yeah.
You're not a predator. You're not a white supremacist. Don't believe what the Me Too movement, you know, tells you, or what Black Lives Matter tells you, okay? You're so much more than that. And never, ever forget, this is your country, okay? And the government, they work for you. You don't work for them. So keep fighting. I would tell your audience, we got to take back this country in November. You know, get out there, vote with your feet, vote with your wallet. You know, go to the polls, wave around a copy of The Woking Dead, and send Pelosi to Italy so she can be the ambassador.
Thank you, AJ. It's always a pleasure.
Sir, you're a patriot. So is your audience. I really appreciate it.
Our guest again today has been AJ Rice, author of The Woking Dead, Publius Prose, Volume 1, How Society's Vogue Virus Destroys Our Culture. It's from Post Hill Press. Thanks so much for joining us. Don't forget, election time is coming up soon. Yes, we're also getting close to Halloween, and that thought that'd be a fun time to run The Woking Dead. For those of you who are fans of the TV show that AJ, of course, was referencing in his title, but also because it's close to voting, and that means be intentional. Go out there and vote, because good people died so that you and I can vote. So we need to do it every chance that we get. So we'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.